We're back with All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz.
As business resumes, I look forward to working together in that same spirit of common cause with members of Congress from both parties. Because before we are Democrats or Republicans, we are Americans.
That's President Obama speaking this morning from the White House, calling for unity in the wake of last weekend's tragedy in Tucson. It's Saturday, the day when James Fallows of The Atlantic often joins us to talk about the ideas behind the headlines. Jim, it's great to have you here.
Hello, Guy. Nice to talk to you.
Now, Jim, we just heard from President Obama a moment ago, picking up on his theme of civility. I know you and many of us watched that speech in Tucson this past week, a speech that may just be remembered as his most memorable.
I think so. And I am biased as a one-time speechwriter myself, but I've been thinking a lot about speeches this week. We're nearing the 50th anniversary of two very important speeches in American history, President Eisenhower's farewell address and about the military-industrial complex, and then John Kennedy's inaugural address right after that.
And Jim, we'll be talking more about Eisenhower's speech on the program tomorrow.
Good. And I think there's something interesting about his speech as a sort of threshold point, which is that it's one of the few speeches that's remembered mainly for the argument it presented. You know, we usually think of speeches as being logical presentations and they're designed to change people's minds. Mm-hmm. But actually, it seems to me, we usually remember them not so much for the point they're making, but the tone they create, how they make the audience feel about the speaker or the president, the public figure, about the nation's prospects, about their own position in life. And I think the ones we heard this week, President Obama's Tucson speech, the ideas in it were not so novel. We should be nicer to each other. It was the tone that made a difference.
Jim, I was struck by how many of President Obama's usual detractors praised that speech, and many of Sarah Palin's staunch supporters seemed a bit uncomfortable with hers.
It was quite a notable difference in tone. It certainly is the case that a negative and angry tone can sometimes work in political life, but in the long run, what people seem to want from their leaders is a source of hope. I think it was quite notable in how Barack Obama, who sometimes can have a sort of somber and downcast tone, instead he turned what could have been a very, very mournful occasion and something that obviously was based on terrible tragedy into a kind of rejoiceful and rejoicing ceremony of saying we can use this tragedy, this crime, as a way to renew ourselves and to come together. And so there was a very upbeat mood by the end. In contrast, we had Sarah Palin, who had a much more defensive tone about who should be blamed and who should not be blamed for these terrible events. And I thought that speaking entirely analytically, not supporting one side or the other here, I had the sense that I was watching a moment very much like the moment in which Edmund Muskie was crying on in the New Hampshire campaign trail in 1972, or when Howard Dean had his scream moment. In the 2004 primaries, or when George Romney, the father of Mitt, when he was running for the Republican nomination in the 1960s, and he came back from Vietnam and said that he had been brainwashed there. And in all of those cases, fairly or unfairly, that moment sort of crystallized a change in that candidate's prospects. And my guess is, we won't know this for a while, but I think people will look back on that speech by Sarah Palin and its juxtaposition and contrast in tone with a speech later that evening by President Obama and saying that that was the time when her prospects changed. Whether or not she ever had a serious chance of winning the presidency, I think we have seen something like a Howard Dean moment in that speech.
That's James Fallows. He's national correspondent for The Atlantic. You can follow his blog at jamesfallows.theatlantic.com. Jim, thank you.
Thank you, Guy.